morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 25th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announces a new 72-hour nationwide ceasefire for Sudan.
The two sides, actually, the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces, the Barra military, they accepted the ceasefire after mediation by the United States.
South Sudanese citizens fleeing the conflict in Sudan arrive in their country's capital, Juba. Sierra Leone's president forms a political alliance ahead of June 24th general election. In Senegal, an ally of President Macky Sall declares his candidacy for the 2024 presidential election. Today is World Malaria Day as the WHO introduces a new vaccine to fight the disease.
We have a malaria vaccine. It's the RTSS vaccine. Completed its clinical trials. It's been authorized for use from a regulatory perspective, and it's in rollout.
And thousands of displaced struggle to survive in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has announced that the Sudanese Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces have agreed to implement a 72-hour nationwide ceasefire beginning at midnight on April 24. He says the United States is urging the two warring parties to immediately and fully uphold the break in fighting. Blinken says the United States will coordinate with regional and international partners and Sudanese civilian stakeholders to assist in the creation of a committee to oversee the negotiation, conclusion, and implementation of a permanent cessation of hostilities and humanitarian arrangements in Sudan. On the line from Khartoum is journalist Mohamed Amin. He says he hopes the parties will respect the new ceasefire.
The two sides, actually, the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces, the Barra military, they accepted the ceasefire after mediation by the United States. Over the last week, they declared many ceasefire, but it has not held because the two sides has continued clashing. But since yesterday, it's a little bit quieter, I can say, although there are clashes here and there, like small-scale clashes. And I think that the reason of that is the two warring parties want to enable the diplomatic missions of, especially the Western diplomatic missions and those of the Arab countries, of the Gulf countries, I mean more specifically, to evacuate their people. So United States, UK, France, other European countries, China, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, UAE, all those people, Jordan, Turkey, they evacuate their nationals, and these operations are still ongoing from Khartoum Airport and from Port Sudan Airport as well. And others also use the land routes like Egypt and others.
So you are saying that you hope that this ceasefire will last, is that correct?
Yes.
Besides the United States, who do you think the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces, which country do you think they listen to or they would listen to make sure that this ceasefire can hold?
Yeah, that's a good question because we know the two sides have different regional and international allies, you know, according to the conflict of interest and the competition over Sudan, over the resources, over the control of Sudan, over the how to shape the future of Sudan, I mean, the post-Bashir period. So we can see that United States now, they are responding positively. The two sides are responding positively, actually, to the warns from the United States. And when I say United States, it's also the Western allies of the United States, like the European, Japan, and the stuff. But we know also China and Russia is also supporting the RSF somehow, and they have interests also in Sudan. We see that also the two sides are accusing each other of getting support from regional countries around, like the RSF is accusing the army of getting like intelligence and military support from Egypt, and the vice versa, and also SAF is accusing RSF of getting support from Gulf countries and from Serbia. So it's like the different competitions and are overlapping in Sudan and leading to this war. And it will shape the future of this war and when it will end.
How can it? Because now, next, after the ceasefire, is the need for talks. There was a process for a transition. Who is to make this possible for the transition to get back on track?
For me, I don't think that the transition come back on track. And I don't think that the transition is even built well. I mean, even the political parties that saying that they are protecting and they are supporting this transition period, but they don't actually.
That was Sudanese journalist Mohamed Amin speaking with us from the capital, Khartoum. Hundreds of South Sudanese citizens who were trapped inside Khartoum due to the ongoing fighting in Sudan arrived in Juba after days of hardship. Some of the returnees were airlifted from Renk in Upper Nile State on Sunday. One of those who arrived in Juba on Saturday says he is grateful that he is home, but he says he is worried about thousands of other South Sudanese who are stranded without transportation and basic necessities in Khartoum. Deng Guy Deng has more for VOA from Boa.
The residents of the Sudanese capital Khartoum, including South Sudanese nationals and other foreigners, have been trapped and remained indoors for days after fighting erupted in the city more than a week ago. Atim Deng Jok, a South Sudanese national who arrived in Juba after fleeing the fighting in Khartoum, says he and other South Sudanese got a chance to leave Khartoum during a temporary three-hour pause in the fighting declared by the two warring parties last week.
A lot of people were actually faced by some difficulties. For example, we spent some days without water. We also spent some days without electricity. All the shops and supermarket were closed, so it was very difficult to get food and water. So we had to wait until the forces of the government and the forces of Hamati tried to agree on how to allow those who have been trapped in different areas to evacuate from where they have been trapped.
Deng says he is worried about thousands of other South Sudanese stranded without transportation and basic necessities in Khartoum.
There are so many South Sudanese, hundreds, if not thousands, hundreds of South Sudanese who have gone to Khartoum for treatment. Some of them have just been removed from the hospital with some tubes, with other oxygen kind of machine. So those people, I don't think if they will really survive because there's no money. And if the money is sent, there's no way you can get the money. Some people even left their money, which was sent to them in the bank. For example, some of those who were coming with me. So we had to share whatever little any of us was actually having so that we evacuate ourselves.
Jong Thon Jok, another South Sudanese who was in Khartoum last week, says the situation is worrying. Thon urges the South Sudan's government to intervene and rescue South Sudanese who are trapped in Sudan's conflict.
The only way to rescue those that have been left trapped in Khartoum is for the South Sudan's government to convince Hamiti and Brahan to cease fire. That will give a chance for the evacuation of the people who have been trapped in their houses. Some people are completely without any money. Also, water and electricity are not there. I would like the government of South Sudan to really act fast and rescue the lives of its citizens, especially those left in hospitals in Khartoum without electricity and water. Many of these people are in a situation they might die.
Manasseh Lomele Waya is the chairperson of South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission. He says his office has plans for South Sudanese escaping the fighting in Khartoum.
We've got three lorries that are based in Rang. They will go to the crossing point at Joda and bring the people to Rang. We don't have enough money for fuel, but UNHCR has offered to give us some fuel to help facilitate transportation of these two.
Waya says his office is engaging some humanitarian agencies, including the WFP, to provide assistance to South Sudanese nationals who are returning from Sudan. For VOA News, I am Deng Guy Deng in Bor.
Incumbent Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio has formed a coalition with parliamentarian Candace Carlett Yomkele ahead of the upcoming June 24 general election. The agreement to form the Progressive Alliance was reached following a meeting between the two at the State House in the capital, Freetown, on Sunday. The move, officials say, aims at strengthening and advancing social and economic development. Both Maada Bio, who leads the governing Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP, and Yomkele, leader of the opposition National Grand Coalition, say they will work together for the betterment of the country's future. Maada Bio is expected to face stiff competition from former Foreign Minister Samura Kamara of the main opposition All People's Congress, the APC party, whom he defeated in the last election. Mohamed Rachman Soare, Sierra Leone's information minister.
We had a very big meeting of progressives from across the country to witness the official signing ceremony of the Progressive Alliance Pact between His Excellency President Julius Maada Bio's Sierra Leone People's Party and Dr. Candace Yomkele's National Grand Coalition at a very impressive ceremony. I mean, the context to the formation of this alliance is very simple. It fits very well with His Excellency's broad vision of building a united, peaceful, and stable Sierra Leone where every Sierra Leonean is able to realize their fullest potentials. So he noted during the launch of the alliance that Sierra Leone is not short of talents. And it's only that these talents and these experiences sit in silos in various political parties with no commitment to come to the center and work for the to meet the development objectives of the country. So the signing of this alliance, in the words of His Excellency, will unlock the potentials of Sierra Leone to bring the very best and brightest from all progressive groups to work in the interest of tackling the very binding constraints that have stifled our development aspirations as a nation.
Now, Mohamed, what does this alliance mean to the prospect or the electoral prospect of President Julius Maada Bio in the coming June 24 presidential election?
His Excellency, President Julius Maada Bio noted in his keynote address yesterday that this alliance, this progressive alliance, is not about the next election. It is about the next generation, right? You want to create an enabling environment where every Sierra Leonean from every nook and corner of the country, irrespective of ethno-regional consideration, will be given a fair and square chance to grow up in an enabling environment and to participate in national development efforts. So, yes, while we'll recognize that the NGC will contribute to a fourth-round victory, which has been the mantra of the campaign even before the official signing of the alliance, but this alliance is not about the next elections. It is about the next generation.
One of the main criticisms of the president is that Sierra Leone is more divided than it used to be, that the opposition leaders are the best place to unite the country. Does this blunt the criticism, as supporters of the SLPP are saying?
Well, so President Bio has always been a unifier. Remember, the party he represents led this country to independence in 1961, and we did that by forming a united front with other political parties, and that was how we got independence. During the Civil War years, again under an SLPP leadership, we were able to rally the troops from various political parties, you know, to pursue the peace option. Today, Sierra Leone enjoys peace.
Sierra Leone's Information Minister Mohamed Rachman Soare was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Freetown. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Hi, I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 25th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In Senegal, an ally of President Macky Sall, has declared his candidacy for the 2024 presidential election. Idrissa Seck is the president of the Economic, Social and Environmental Council in President Macky Sall's ruling coalition. His decision to run comes at a time when President Sall is refusing to say whether he will seek a third term, a move that the opposition says would be in violation of the constitution. Senegalese political analyst Ibrahima Khan tells me that Seck, like others in the opposition, believe President Sall should not run again.
He is a leader of a political party. He believes that he has a chance for the next election. And he is also saying to everybody that Macky Sall cannot run for the presidency. So I believe if you take all those arguments, he's ready for the next election in 2024.
He was in coalition with President Macky Sall, is that correct?
Yes.
So is he going to be running on his own or as a partner of President Macky Sall's party?
In his own, he resigned from his position as the chairman of one of the constitutional body of Senegal. He resigned from the coalition that Macky Sall created to support his presidency. And he's in his own now agenda, trying to do everything to organize his candidature.
Does this mean now that it's official that President Macky Sall may not run for a third term?
Not really. It just means that one partner or one member of Macky Sall coalition has decided to leave the coalition and to, you know, run for the presidency. Macky Sall himself has not said if he's going to run or not. On Saturday, he was in a program on a private radio in Senegal. They asked him if he was going to run. He said he has not yet taken his decision, that the day he takes his decision, he will inform everybody. But for many political analysts, there is no doubt that he's going to run for a third term, because everything that is happening in his coalition, there is no other candidate. Himself is doing the tour of the whole country. I think next week he's going to another region to visit for a week. So I think he's doing everything to prepare his own candidature very soon.
On the opposition side, besides Mr. Seck, we have Karim Wade and we have Sonko. Where do we stand on the opposition side?
Well, it's not clear so far that any of the people that you have named will be next year candidates. You know, Sonko has two cases filed against him in the judiciary. And if he's sentenced in one of them, he won't be able to compete. For the president's son, the condemnation that he got 5 years ago prevent him from running, because according to the legislation that we have here, if as long as you are sentenced for a number of years in prison, you lose your civil rights. And there is no limitation. You know, that's also one of the problems of the Senegalese legislation. So far, the likelihood that somebody in the opposition will be candidate is maybe Sonko, because he's still maneuvering to avoid being sentenced.
Ibrahima Khan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dakar. As the world marks World Malaria Day today, Tuesday, it is estimated that at least one child dies of the disease every 2 minutes globally. According to the World Health Organization, 95% of the deaths occur in Africa, where the disease is endemic. The world is grappling to contain the new malaria vector, Anopheles stephensi, that is described as dangerous and can breed in areas that were not prone to malaria, including urban areas. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
The theme of the World Malaria Day this year is Time to Deliver Zero Malaria, Invest, Innovate, and Implement. According to the WHO's latest World Malaria Report, there were 247 million cases of the disease in 2021 compared to 247 million cases in 2020. The estimated number of malaria deaths stood at 619,000 in 2021 compared to 625,000 in 2020. Africa continues to be the most affected with 95% of malaria cases and 96% deaths. Dorothy Fosa Achu is the team lead tropical and vector-borne disease at the WHO Regional Office for Africa. She says the new malaria strain caused by vector called Anopheles stephensi is dangerous and drug-resistant. She says that the vector thrives in many areas, including those that are not malaria endemic. On the other hand, the director of the WHO organization's Department of Immunizations, Vaccines and Biologicals, Kate O'Brien, says the WHO is facing vaccine resistance. She encourages countries with a high malaria burden to accelerate vaccine uptake.
We have a malaria vaccine. It's the RTSS vaccine. It's been introduced, it's completed its clinical trials. It's been authorized for use from a regulatory perspective, and it's in rollout. So very exciting program of rollout. The difficulty with the RTSS vaccine is that it's in quite constrained supply. And so we're really looking for enhancing that supply, which is an ongoing effort to develop a supplier that can produce the vaccine in much greater quantities.
Africa continues to bear the burden of the impact of malaria on child and pregnant women. The WHO report indicates that four African countries, Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Tanzania, and Niger accounted for over half of malaria deaths worldwide. WHO representative to Kenya, Diallo Abdulrahman, says in Africa, out of 40 million pregnancies, 13.3 million are exposed to the disease during pregnancy, which increases the risk of low birth weights.
The target is to reach over 134,093 children annually in eight counties around Lake Victoria in Nyanza and Western Kenya, where malaria is endemic. At the beginning of March 2023, Kenya distributed the vaccine to another 25 sub-counties in addition to the initial 26, reaching at least 133,185 more children.
The WHO says political commitment, sustainable funding, community engagement, and inclusive health systems are needed for Africa to achieve malaria-free future. With the current interventions, the global anti-malaria community has averted 2 billion malaria cases and 11.7 million deaths between the year 2000 and 2021. 82% of those cases and 95% of deaths were averted in Africa. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
The resurgence of M23 rebels in the Democratic Republic of Congo has forced several thousand people to leave their villages. Others have had to stay despite the suffering they have endured. A few days after the withdrawal of the rebels, correspondent Zaneb Neti Zaide went to meet some of them and has this report.
Zirabakurikiza Jean, a hairdresser, lives in the city of Bunagana in Ruchuru territory. He is grateful for the gradual return of peace after the area was taken over by Ugandan troops, which are parts of the forces of the East African Community. However, he deplores the fact that he no longer receives any clients because so many have been displaced by war. He says since the beginning of the displacement here, business has slowed down. Before, they had a large number of clients, ranging from 20 to 25 people. But today, they only receive 5 people per week. Since the deployment of the EAC regional force in Ruchuru and Nyiragongo territories, the security situation has started to change. The Goma-Ruchuru road, which is under the control of Kenyan forces, has been reopened. Bimenyimana Gregoire, a member of civil society, acknowledges the efforts of the regional EAC force, but deplores that some areas are still under rebel control. He says living conditions are bad. As motorcyclists, they have taxis imposed on them by the M23. They are not able to leave Rutshuru for Goma and vice versa because of activities is paralyzed. For its part, the East African Force pursues its mission of bringing peace. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Nechizaidi in Goma.
And that's it for this Tuesday, April 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.